Welcome to the flyfisher.co.za podcasts. So I heard on the radio the other day that it is very difficult to interview a friend of yours, and unfortunately I'm now going to be stressed out with that. I'm interviewing my good friend Tony Kitzman, and I just wanted to introduce him and say that I've been fishing with Tony since the early 90s. We fished for yellowfish, we fished for trout. He's the one who dragged me off to all my small streams, and I really do have the privilege of introducing him to the podcasts.
Thank you.
Well, Tony, let's start off with the simple stuff. Where did you start and how did you get into fly fishing?
As a student, I was at Rhodes University, and Martin Davies was my employer during my VACs. I used to catch eels for research as a project he was running, and Martin taught me to fish. He introduced me to fly fishing. We caught bass at first, and bluegills, and funny things like that, and later on, trout. Martin also taught me that there were numerous species that would take a fly. Long before saltwater fly fishing became anything in South Africa, Martin was already chasing other species with a fly.
Okay, so let's touch on the eels, because you've got some info there that I think people would like to hear. What makes eels so impressive?
Okay, an eel, I'm not sure in terms of its evolutionary position, if it's an old species or a modern species, but they're highly adapted. Eels live in South Africa in our east flowing rivers, and what separates an eel from other fish is that it actually has a larval stage. It doesn't go from egg to juvenile to adult. It goes from a larval stage egg to a larval stage called a lecticephali that then metamorphoses, becomes an alva, and the alva then grows into an eel.
How do they get into the streams?
Now, South African eels, we think, spawn somewhere off Madagascar, because the eels live in the streams. They go out to sea to spawn. They then spawn, the eggs hatch, become lecticephali, drift down the ocean currents, and they pick up a stimulus like a flooding river, fresh water in the ocean, which will trigger them to metamorphose. They change into, well, we used to call them glass eels because they see through and not feeding yet, and these move up the rivers.
And that's what you counted?
Yes, we used to catch them, count 1,000 and then weigh them. And some evenings, well, up to 30,000 elvers.
Running up a stream?
Yeah, well, it was a Kaiskama River, mostly, that I worked on, and that would be the ebb and flow. You catch them because the little elver hasn't got the strength to swim up against the current, so it's actually got to get out of the water onto the wet sides of a weir or something, or rocks. We even created artificial barriers, and that's when they become accessible.
Sure.
Interestingly enough, the tarpon, and it has South African relatives like our oxeye and the skipjack, I also have a lecticephali stage.
Okay, and Martin's still obviously a professor at Rhodes University.
Well, he's not a professor. I don't know exactly what his title is, but he's teaching aquaculture and running their fish farm.
Okay. So after you did your stint at the Rhodes University, you moved up to Joburg?
Yeah, I came to Joburg with intentions of getting into the film industry or advertising. Got up here, quite a few of my old varsity friends were involved in the film industry, so I got in there, and I spent over a decade there, and it was great. It was stimulating,
Cool. And then your fly fishing, how did that eventually come about?
Well, Martin sort of taught me to fly fish. I did on rare occasions subsequently. In the early 90s, I had my last bike prang. I used to get my jollies riding bikes, and I needed something meaningful to replace it with, and that became fly fishing.
Yeah.
And thereafter, Martin actually invited me down to Barkley East, where they were having a festival, and I fell in love with the area, ended up spending as much time as I could there subsequently, and now I live in the area.
Yeah. Well, you dragged me off to Mpumalanga many years ago. Yeah. We went and fished the speckworm, so what do you know about the Mpumalanga area, and how do you fish it, and what do you do there?
Well, I fished the syndicate waters, catching large fish in dams and things like that, but didn't really get into streams there much because they just weren't open to the public. And we ended up fishing the Vaal more, and I would still rather fish the Vaal than Mpumalanga because they're wild fish.
Yeah, I know. We've had a stellar day on the Vaal, you and I. We've had a couple, yeah, true.
Yeah.
We went that day when we went small fly, small rods, and slaughtered the fish. Nothing really, anything to write home about. But I mean,
well, a couple of fish up to 2 kilos there.
Yeah, true.
Yeah,
true.
Well, what happened is we used all the traditional sort of yellowfish patterns and just watched our indicators darting across the stream all day without hooking up.
Yeah.
At lunch, we decided to try light rods and small flies, and then things happened.
Yeah, I still, that's the only day I've ever outfished you, 69 versus 54. I remember the score well.
Yeah, but I got bored. I had to go and try other things. Besides, you were fishing in my footsteps.
Yeah, true, true. Okay, so you moved off to, Martin took you down to Rhodes, and you enjoyed your little stint in that part of the world.
But that's the postgraduate Rhodes, where they do courses in fly fishing, chilling and drinking. The Rhodes in the mountains, the center of the universe.
Okay, and let's run into the area. Yeah. I know that we're talking the same kind of height as Clarence, because we've got the Clarence sandstone that runs right through the area. We're talking real Southernberg.
Yes. There are two Southern Drakensbergs. There's what the Natal people call Southern Drakensberg, which is actually the Natal Southern Drakensberg. The real Southern Drakensberg starts at Barkley Pass.
Yeah, and Rhodes sits in a little hamlet of Rhodes. Let's talk about the town very quickly.
Well, it's a small village. You'll hear me referring to the center of the universe, because as far as I'm concerned, it is. And the center of the universe is surrounded by a number of heavens. We have the Bell, the Stadsbreit, the Boksbreit, and all of these flow into the Kraai, which then drains into the Orange in Elowell North.
Okay. And the town itself, the whole town is proclaimed as a national monument?
It is. It is a national monument. There are all sorts of different theories as to its origins, but its origins were basically farming, and it was a center where people got together for nachmal, for church services. And once a church was built there, the village thrived. At the time, there was a school there, there were a couple of shops, there was a post office, a bank even, I think. I'm not sure about the bank part, but it died back subsequently. It got very depopulated. A phase in the early 70s when it was almost a hippie colony, but the authorities managed to chase them away. Now, people have invested in the area, and it's a chill-out place.
Yeah.
And it's also, access to the most fishing in the country. You can get onto well over 200 kilometers of water through the Wild Trout Association, which is an association made up of, stakeholders, the riparian owners, basically, people who will open their waters to the public.
Mm-hmm. You said access. How is the river access? I mean, are the roads right up to the rivers, and how do you get onto the streams?
The place is quite well signposted. You'll be informed when you book your beat. You book your beat, and the beauty of that is that your party is the only one who will see that water that day. You may see a shepherd in the distance, or the landowner will be coming across to wish you luck, give you some tips, or say, come and have a dorp when you're finished.
Yeah.
The local people there actually invented hospitality, and they're busy perfecting it.
Okay, so let's talk about the main rivers in the area. We've got the Bell River. Let's just run through some of its attributes.
Okay, all of the rivers rise high in the mountains, and so you've basically got an upper gradient section, then you've got a slower middle section, and then this even slower, wider gravel section at the bottom. I personally prefer the gradient sections because it's clean bedrock, and fish definitely prefer clean bedrock. And it's also because of the gradient, you've got flow all the time.
So if we take the Bell River,
somebody
arrives on day one, where are you going to send them off to?
I'd probably, after a discussion and to find out what the guy needs, what he's heard about, what he wants to do, you'd probably send him close to the village first and let him to places like Newstead or Lovedale and let him earn his right to go to the top.
Okay. When you say the top, you're talking about Bormans?
Bormans Chase, yeah. Bormans Chase is one of the great beats in this country.
Yeah. Wow, what makes Bormans so great?
Well, it's the environment for a start, the river itself, which goes through a series of shallow pools at the top, gradually getting into deeper pools as you go into a gorge.
And the fish that you can expect to catch in that part?
Well, I had a look there about 3 weeks ago, and I've never seen so many 20-inch fish up there. There are a lot of big fish at the moment. They're concentrated in the pools because the streams are very low.
Yeah,
but I have seen more big fish on the top of the Bell than anywhere else.
So when the rain comes, it's going to fish like a dream.
Yes, the fish will spread out, move into the faster water, and definitely going to be good, yeah.
Okay, so let's jump over the spit there, and let's go and talk about the box sprat.
Well, the box sprat, as far as I'm concerned, is the prince of all streams, particularly Gateshead, and walking above Gateshead, you go into a gorge that is, it's just indescribably beautiful, and it's got great fishing. It's a really good river. The fish breed well there, so unfortunately your size is a bit, tend to catch smaller fish, but they're great quality fish.
Yeah.
Lower down in the box sprat, in the middle reaches, when there's good flows, in fact the river bursting its banks and it can be crystal clear, tends to produce the bigger fish then, and you can hope to catch 16-inch fish.
Let's move a little further west now. We go to the Stag Sprat.
The Stag Sprat is probably the longest river in the area. So it also has a wider floodplain. It's more farmed agriculturally for fodder crops, ploughed. So it does take a bit of a hammering when there's a lot of rain, but it does also produce big fish, particularly in its lower reaches.
And that river needs a bit of colour.
Yes, the Stag definitely fishes best when it's got a slight green tinge, which I'm told comes from the calcium content in the water.
Sure.
I've actually recently seen reports on the water at the top at Gateshead and the Stag Sprat at Burkhall, and both of them are actually quite a bit better than mineral water.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah, I must say, I enjoy drinking the water out of those streams.
There's only three kinds of fishing. There's saltwater fishing, where you can't drink the water. The Vaal, you can't drink, and then, my kind of fishing, tiny streams where you drink the water.
Yeah. There are a couple of bridges on the road in. Now, at the first bridge, it's Mashesha, so that's where the rivers join.
Yeah, the Stag Sprat and the Bell join to become the Cry there.
And how does a Cry fish from the bridge down?
It can fish well. I haven't been on it for quite a while. I've been opening up and getting onto waters much lower down on the Cry, and we've been having great fishing, sight fishing to yellowfish.
Okay, then at Barkley,
The Longkloof, yeah. The Longkloof joins the Cry just outside Barkley.
Okay, now Mario, who guides down that part of the world, has got a monster fish out of the Longkloof.
The Longkloof just produces big fish. I don't know why. It's generally got a sandstone bottom as opposed to basalt, which is the higher altitude stuff, but it produces big fish.
And let's move even further down towards Allewell now, and we get to Alphen Denise's place.
The Karnmalk on Lupela.
Your favorite piece of water.
Yes, that is. I've never been on that water without seeing a fish over 20 inches. Mm. And caught bigger and seen bigger. The river itself, though, it's got a lot of holding pools on it, so it'll never dry up, so there'll always be fish there.
Yeah.
And the problem with it is it needs to drop. You need rains, the river's got to come up, and when it drops, the fish move into the Foss shallow water, and then it fishes beautifully.
And then there's a beautiful piece of stream above a waterfall. Tell us about that.
Ah, yeah, no, this is Baloch, the Willow Stream.
Yeah.
Baloch is actually on probably, arguably, the most beautiful farm in the country. It's certainly, I think, the most looked after farm. If you see a sign of erosion, there's a sign of something to fix it. It also, you can have a full flood there and that water will be running clear within a day. You're fishing a little stream which at times is less than a meter wide and holds 18-inch brown trout.
Yeah.
They're only browns above the reservoir and they're also free rising.
Yeah.
So, no, that's one of the great fishes in Rhodes. The great fishes, as far as I'm concerned, is the top of the Bell, or not the top, just below the top, which is Borman's Chase. The top of the Box Sprat, which is above Gateshead. Baloch, which is the Willow Stream. Actually, it's been christened the Willow Stream. It flows into what's called the Fluid Kraal, which then flows into the Jochum. And the big secret around Rhodes is actually the Rifle Sprat.
Yeah, it has to be the Rifle Sprat. But now you moved down there to do a little bit of guiding. I mean, you had some personal issues in Joburg, and then you decided that's a good place to go. So now, with your guiding, what are you offering your clients, and what do you believe is a good policy for a guide to carry?
Well, you basically, the guy's got to catch fish. And I always try and get somebody to catch a fish on a dry fly or a nymph first, catch on both of those, and then we go and find a fish. And once the guy sees the fish and he catches that fish, I turn to him afterwards and I say, well, do you realize what you've just done? He says, oh, no, I just caught a fish. And I said, no, you caught a fish on purpose. And it's actually quite amazing to see a client blossom and disappear up the stream like a cormorant. It's just give him the confidence when he can do it on purpose.
Yeah, but it's more than just guiding for fish.
Oh, no. It's about the birds, it's about the flowers, and it's about how they all come together.
Yeah.
And an interesting little adjunct that's cropped up lately has been quite a bit of rock art.
Oh, is it?
Yeah,
there is a lot of rock art.
Amazing rock art in the area. And what makes a lot of it really interesting is it's amongst the most recent.
When you say the most recent, why?
Well, there's stuff that obviously shows the sand and the courses. The bodies are indicated different shapes, different color, and things like that. Shots of people riding horses. There's even one where I think a guy's firing a gun.
Sure.
And I know where there's one of a fish, which would have been a yellowfish.
All right, so let's look at it a bit more openly now. Let's say if I go down there, where am I going to stay? Who's going to put me up?
Well, the best option is to stay in the village of Rhodes, the center of the universe. That's simply because it's centrally situated. You could drive out to as much as sort of 30 or even 80 k's for a day's fishing from the village. It obliterates a lot of the perils of drunken driving. And how does one find accommodation there? Well, you hop onto the Rhodes website.
I've got a link on the website.
Yeah, or contact Highland Info or Dave Walker. And there are a number of options from camping through self-catering to lodges and hotels.
Okay, well, we've spoken about the stream fishing, we've spoken about the accommodation. So let's quickly touch on what kind of stillwater fishing is in the area.
There are not many dams in the area. The finest of the lot, which has got to be my favorite dam on the planet, in fact, is Loch Ness below Triffendale.
Yeah.
What makes this dam special is that it's got natural recruitment. There's no stocking. And in fact, at the end of winter, we were catching fish there that were possibly the most beautiful fish I've ever seen. In that, well, Tom Sutcliffe talks about white tips on fins.
Mm.
And I've never seen it on dam fish before. And these fish, you could see the white tips when they were in the water
sure.
even. They were still in full breeding colors.
Sure.
They were beautiful fish. Barcy Forsler on the Stout Plate has a dam at Burkhall as well, which is known to produce some rather large fish. And then if one's prepared to travel a bit longer, go over the mountain onto the McClare side, there are a number of dams there. But why doesn't one want to fish in a dam when there's streams?
Yeah, I'm sure. Speaking of that, let's talk about tackling techniques for stream fishing.
Okay, I'm a self-confessed light tackle junkie. I fish with a 000 and a 0, and most of my clients end up fishing with my tackle. These rods make it easier. They're purpose designed. A really skillful person can present beautifully with a 4-weight, but a 0-weight presents for you, and you'll get onto fish that you wouldn't get onto otherwise. Incredibly accurate. The biggest problem with all stream fishermen is the need to false cast. And once you can get over that, which is what the light rods are designed to do, just shoot line, you'll actually get more fish. Rather sneak closer and present to the fish.
Yeah, you have shouted at me once or twice when I've been making one or too many false casts, but I've got better at it. So.
Well, you need to sometimes to tighten up your loop for accuracy or to cut into the wind, but with wind you've got a rippled surface and that helps you.
Yeah, true.
And we've actually learned how to fish the wind. You can drift your dry down the pool a couple of times in the lull between the gusts, and the fish won't touch it. The moment that river is choppy, when a gust hits it, you splat your dry fly down right into the riffles, and the fish comes up and nails it immediately, because they're expecting it.
Yeah.
They're expecting things to get blown into the water.
Well, what are the dry flies you fish?
Well, there's the old favorite, the rab. Which I think is one of the greatest flies ever invented, but I'm actually finding the Klinkhammer to be more and more useful.
Okay. And nymphs?
Nymphs, Azak. I've tested it against other flies and just outperformed them. I'm playing with bio feathers at the moment and trying to come up with something, and that seems to be very successful, particularly in the smaller sizes, and now with the low water, you want something small and light to be able to present it gently.
Mm-hmm. And tippets and leaders?
Leaders, I'm tying my own leaders simply because they're the cheapest. The problem with the commercial leaders is they're too thick in the butt, the tapered leaders.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got to buy a 12-foot one and you end up cutting all 5 foot of it anyway. So it's quicker and easier just to tie my own. I have played with frog leaders, which are lovely until they come unwrapped. But they do spray a bit. And tippets, Well, I try and fish as heavy as possible. It's just fairer on the fish. You can land them quicker. Under frost water conditions, if I can get away with a 5X, I will. But generally, at the moment, we're fishing 6 and even 7X, which can be a problem.
Just in case you hear a bit of a sound quality, we've been chased off the lawn onto the patio, which is underneath the roof. We've got a bit of an echo. I think we're all a bit grateful for the rain.
Yes, very much so. And I hope it's raining at the center of the universe as well.
Okay, so we're talking of rain. Let's talk about the gear we need. Rain jackets, backpacks, boots.
Fishing in the mountains, conditions can change very rapidly. The temperature can drop 15 degrees in 15 minutes. Howling winds come through in a storm. So you need sort of some basic survival gear, a raincoat, a fleece, some gloves, a beanie. And that I carry with myself all the time. Clothing-wise, well, I always fish in long pants and long sleeves. Long sleeves protect you from the sun. And with these lightweight, quick-dry gear, they can also be very useful to cool you down. You just dip your whole arm into the stream and the wind cools you down.
True.
Long pants always, because there's always something that's going to scratch you or prickle you. And then you're concentrating on your personal comfort rather than the important things like watching the stream and fishing. One has to have boots for the ankle protection in the mountains, and the soles will give you better grip. At present, I'm using the finest boots I've ever worn, which are a pair of Sims with an Aquastel sole. For fishing the Vaal, I would like to fish with felt, but in the mountains where you're only crossing the stream, and generally try and stay out of it, in fact, rather cross the stream and walk long distances, the rubber is working a treat. Well, of course, you need your rods, lines, and one is, of course, as the years go on, aspires to getting more minimalist. I've been through all the stage of all the gadgets and gizmos and things, and I'd love to go fishing now with a pair of nippers, a roll of tippet material, and one fly box.
Yeah, on the little trip on the Moy River I was on recently, I could have quite easily done that, except for the rain in the morning, I would have got wet. If we were to jump over the mountain quickly, I really wanted to do the whole of the roads area, but we've got a bit of time, so let's talk about McClure.
Well, every time I, well, of the escarpment, in fact, every time I get over the mountain, I'm amazed because I get taken to and shown something new, and they've got some serious waters there. A lot of the rivers in that area flow into the Chitsa before it eventually ends up in the Umzumvubu, flowing out into the ocean at Port St. John's. Those are all east-flowing rivers, and if we go back to the eels, actually hold eels.
Yeah.
The Chitsa has got to be the most amazing river I've ever seen. It's large. There are no boulders to turn over and have a look at the insects, for instance, because they've all been washed away. It's big rocks and great fish, and the fish look different. They're sort of translucent almost, and very lightly marked, and I think that's because of the white sand. So there are other beautiful little treasures like the wildebeest. I never go to Yugi or Elliot anymore via Nordea's Neck. I always go via the Buster Footpath now, which is the most spectacular drive, and come back via Nordea's Neck. I manage to get down there about once a month. I have some very good friends in the area, and it's a great break.
Yeah.
Right. Unfortunately, their water, they get slightly more rainfall than over the escarpment, and their streams generally tend to take quite a hammering with runoff. Fish is best before the rains come and after the rains are gone. April, May would be the prime time.
Well, speaking of that, that was going to be my wrap-up kind of question. When do you recommend people come down? And then the final bit is going to be, what else is there to do down there?
Okay, well, first of all, when the time to come down is whenever the rivers are in good condition. We didn't get good snows this winter, so the rivers aren't flowing well. Had there been a lot of snow, there would have been more runoff and sustained runoff. So it just depends on when there's water. The place can fish amazingly any month of the year. As I mentioned, the sub-escarpment part of the place fishes best in early in the season and late in the season. In summer, at times, it can get a bit warm, so you're restricted to early morning and late afternoon fishing, simply because of the shallow water flowing over shallow bedrock.
Yeah. What else is there to do? I mean, we know we've got Tiffendale on top of that.
Well, Tiffendale's there. That's winter entertainment, and in fact, the village is busiest in winter. when people stay in the village and do transfers up for skiing every day. It's a floral heaven between January and about March. There are numerous endemic species, stuff that only occurs at that altitude. And it's a lot of alpine and subalpine vegetation, and there's significant changes at various altitudes. And the people, only a certain sort of person wants to go there anyway, so there's automatically a common interest with virtually everybody you meet. And yeah, all I can say is come and see for yourself. Yeah.
Well, let's touch on the people. Let's talk about Grandpa.
Grandpa. Dave Walker is, I'd like to think of him as the core around which the village revolves. Dave has done so much for the village. In fact, he used to be a mayor even.
Self-appointed.
No. This was officially elected. Yeah. Yeah, we made him a chain out of beer cans because there wasn't a proper one that came with the office. Dave is a legend, and the roads wouldn't be what it is without Dave. He's done amazing things. He was involved in the establishment of the Wild Trout Association. His latest project is getting an airfield up and running, which is the process is happening. He's organized a vulture restaurant. It's been fenced. We're just busy finishing off the fencing, and we can soon start feeding.
Now, not to touch on a competitor of yours, but there's another guy down there.
There are two, actually. There's Fred Steinberg. Fred is an awesome fly fisherman whose technical skills are amazing. Fred runs around taking people to Angola, Lake Nasser, South America, the Seychelles in Australia, so it left a gap for me in town. and the more the merrier. Competition is good.
Yeah, and who's the other one?
Zuch Conradi has joined Fred, and I haven't fished with Zuch yet, but he talks the talk. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Barcy has to be one of the main characters in the area.
Barcy is a legend. Barcy owns the finest piece of water on the planet, I think, which is Gateshead, as well as Birkhall. And Barcy's a character of note. It's recommended that one takes a toothbrush with if you go and visit him. He's one of the locals, inventors of hospitality, and he's got it close to perfected. He also hunts a lot in winter. They shoot grayling in winter, and Barcy is the man.
Okay, but now everybody expects Barcy with an Afrikaans name like Barcy to be as Afrikaans as they come.
Well, Barcy was sent to an English school and Afrikaans universities and everything, and was either too English or too Afrikaans through his whole life. And so let's just say he's quite bilingual.
Okay, time to wrap it up. I think we're running a bit low on that. So let's run into the quick five favorites. Favorite dry fly?
Favorite dry fly. At the moment, it's a clinkhammer, but a rab is just, it's got its own cachet or whatever.
Favorite nymph?
Favorite nymph. Got to be a Zach, but I'm trying to make the bite a better one. Yeah.
Favorite rod?
Without doubt, the old original zero weight, the SPL Nought. I wish they still made them.
Favorite species?
I'd have to say trout, actually, because there's a certain something about trout, or is it the places that you catch them? But a yellowfish in those streams up there is also an amazing opponent. And in fact, he's probably twice the fish a trout is. So.
True. Favorite gadget or gizmo?
A gadget or gizmo? That's a difficult one. Because I've got all the toys and I'm now trying to get rid of all of them. but it'd probably be my fly tying device, in fact. A good old Renzetti.
And original traveler.
Yes, yeah, borderline antique or veteran first. Still works, hasn't broken. I haven't been able to break it. Yeah,
it's a better way of putting it. A favorite movie, author, book?
I used to make movies and I haven't been to movies for years, so can I skip that one? I don't watch DVDs either, but I listen to music instead, and it's got to be Patricia Barber. Books, I read anything I can get my hands on. Fishing related of recent reads, probably the best one was Salmon Fishing in the Yemen.
Oh, you enjoyed it?
Yes, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And also, when I go back and read it occasionally, I must say Tom Sutcliffe's book Hunting Trout, I think, is a masterpiece.
We're moving on to the all-expenses-paid trip anywhere in the world.
Can't I use the money to buy my own Bitter River instead? Or no, it would have to be the Amazon.
Amazon, not South Island.
No, the Amazon, simply because it's the most unknown and it's disappearing.
Thank you, Tony. Really appreciate it.
Well, thanks, Mike. Nice to spend time with you again. And when are we going to do it on the water?
They say, you know, life is given. But I tell you now, it's all within that river. You find yourself in the heart of heaven. Close off so long, you could swim forever. One place to rest your grace, the silver sands lead the way. The water's golden, stories told, three clouds, sapphire summer days. Fun way to spend your day, take yourself deep right away. Drive 6 hours and walk 5 days. Hey, hey, hey.